Imagine earning continuing education credits while doing exactly what you're doing right now. Well, you can. Gable Media has revolutionized the way you earn your continuing education credits with a groundbreaking approach. Forget running around town and scouring the internet for credit-worthy courses. Fulfill your CE requirements effortlessly by listening to engaging podcasts just like the one you're listening to now. Our podcasts are designed to educate, entertain, and inspire, all in a user-friendly environment. But wait, there's more. Architects, Gable Media is also approved as an AIA Continuing Education Services provider. Upon completion, we handle everything, from reporting your hours directly to the AIA to storing your certificates in your personal Gable Media profile for your self-reporting needs. So follow the link in the show notes and start earning your credits in the most innovative and entertaining way possible with Gable Media.
My name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where each week I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. Today, I am joined by David Warfel. He is a lighting designer, an entrepreneur, an author, an educator, who's helping us all see light in a whole new way. If you're part of the Entree Architect Network, you already know David. He's one of our favorite expert training presenters, and his sessions are some of our most watched ever, for sure. No doubt about it. They are number one in terms of popularity. As the founding designer at Light Can Help You, David leads a team bringing approachable, affordable lighting design to homes and businesses all across North America. Through his work and his writing, he shows how light doesn't just brighten our spaces, it can actually improve our health, boost our productivity, and strengthen our businesses. Today, we're diving into the power of natural light and how it impacts the way we live and work. David Warfel, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Mark, it's great to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you here. I always love talking with you. You've been at the Entree Architect community for a long time. You've presented for us. You've shared content with us. You're inspiring. You're passionate about what you do. You're all about light. And so you and I were having a conversation a few months back, and we were talking about natural light and how natural light, which ironically from a lighting designer, you would think, oh, artificial lighting is his world. But we started talking about natural light, and you lit up and you started talking about it and sharing all sort of facts and figures. And I'm like, we have to share this with our audience. And so that's why I invited you here. I'm looking forward to talking all about light and how it can help us. But before we do that, David, I want to learn more about you. I don't know your origin story. So when did you discover your passion for what you do, and who or what inspired you to get started?
Well, I think I discovered my passion for what I do last week. seriously, I've had a passion for light probably since around the age of 12 or 13.
Wow.
Is when I was first conscious of it. And that was in the theatrical world where you get to play with light and you get to manipulate it and you get to evoke emotions with light. So that was one half of my interests, and my other interests were architecture. So at the same time, about that same time, I got my first drafting table and started, you know, designing house plans that were terrible. And, you know, I put those, it took me a long time, probably 10, 15 years before I put those together and said, wait a minute, what I do in the theatrical side and what I do in the architectural side, there's a way for these two to actually be one career. And if you ask for an origin story, I would say that's kind of the light origin. Part of it is growing up on a farm. There's nothing else to do on the farm once the work is done. So you have to be imaginative and make stuff up. So I've always been on the creative side and made things up.
Where did you grow up?
In the middle of Illinois. So really good farmland, really good corn. I grew up literally surrounded by cornfields. It was a good growing up and very close to a good architecture school at the University of Illinois. So I was able to study there for undergrad and then went back. They also had a good lighting design, theatrical lighting design program. So I went back there. But I also think that, you know, my origin story also could be framed as a lot of failures, as, you know, failing as an architect, you know, failing as a university professor, which I did for 12 years, you know, failing as a commercial lighting designer, which I did for a number of years. But all of those failures were experiences. And, you know, certainly there were successes there as well.
Yeah.
Grossly oversimplifying it. But of course, I don't do any of those things anymore. But all of those things added up to be good experiences to put me where I am now, which is lighting design primarily for residential spaces. So you can look at it in all kinds of ways. You know, the official bio is probably all like fancy, wow, look at all the great stuff he's done or whatever. But the reality is I'm a farm kid that's failed a lot, and you learn a lot in those failures. And eventually you get to that point in your life where you're like, wait a minute, I've learned all this stuff. I can put this together.
Yeah.
And that started about 10 years ago for me, I think.
Do you remember that moment? Well, let me ask a different question. Do you remember the moment when you discovered that there was a profession around lighting design, right? That you were interested in architecture. You were probably a tinkerer, right? Because you're a creator and you grew up on a farm. That equals tinkerer.
Yep.
And so do you remember when that light bulb went off? And you said that, you know, you had this moment, but what inspired that? Like, what was the thing that said, oh, there's a career there?
Yeah, I do remember that moment, Mark. I was in the lighting class in architecture school. So there was one class that covered, I think, lighting and HVAC, like all of that could be covered in a semester. And the lighting professor, which I was not all that interested in the class. The class was not, it didn't do it for me. So that it wasn't that. But they took us on a field trip to a lighting manufacturer that had a big learning center, showroom, you know, all kinds of stuff where they could demonstrate lighting. And there was this person giving us a tour, and this person really knew all kinds of stuff about light and lighting. And I wish I knew who she was, because I would try and find her now.
Yeah.
But she said at one point, we were eating lunch, and it was a free lunch, which, you know, when you're a student, it's like, wow, the manufacturer bought me a free lunch. Now, of course, it's just like, well, that's their, what they
do. Do you remember what manufacturer it was?
Yes, it was Cooper Lighting. When they
she
had
might
this,
be listening.
She might be listening. Okay, if you're listening, thank you. But it was Cooper Lighting, and they had the source in Chicago. So when it was in Chicago, that was the name of their facility. But she said, and this is as close to a quote as I can remember, she said, all the best architectural lighting designers come from theater.
Hmm.
And that's not actually true.
Ding.
But right. But I heard architecture,
yeah,
lighting, and theater in the same sentence from someone who said, when you put those together, you have an advantage.
Yeah.
And I thought, wait a minute, I do both of those things. What do you mean there's a thing where you put them together and that's a thing?
I love that.
That was that moment. And it took me a few years to put all of that together. But I obviously, you know, 30 years later, I still remember that moment.
Yeah, yeah. So your role, the company is Light Can Help You. What's your role there today? What do you do?
So I've never found a job title that I really like. The one that comes closest is Chief Evangelist of Light, which, you know, has kind of got a kind of a heavy dose of...
I have introduced you as the Chief
Evangelist
exactly.
of Light. Yeah, exactly. I have a hard time saying it with a straight face, but it does describe what I do. So just getting the word out about light. But in the day-to-day operations, you could also call me the innovation officer. So my job is to see opportunities and create avenues to act on those opportunities, to create processes that our team can use to act on those opportunities. So I've gotten to where I'm really enjoying what I do because it's very forward-looking and very entrepreneurial. Like, I'm essentially creating new business lines or creating new ways to do business. And then our team helps me flesh those out and then they roll with it. So it's a lot of just brain time, really. And then a lot of speaking and talking and, you know, getting up in front of people and telling them how awesome this stuff is.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're so good at that. That is the teaching part you're very, very good at. And obviously, now that I understand that you have a theatrical background, I could see how the presentation part also appeals to you, because you obviously put a lot of time into your presentations. They're exceptionally designed and well presented. And so the dots are connecting.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, you take the architect, which likes graphics. You take the theatrical person who had a flair for the dramatic and knows what a good show is and what a bad show is, and put it all together. And yeah, that's me.
Yeah, we have several David Warfel webinars recorded in the network. So if you're a member of the Entre Architect Network, I highly recommend that you go and watch if you haven't already done that. Let's talk about light. Let's talk about the high level light in terms of light in general. How does light affect us as human beings, right? Obviously, we don't survive, right? That's part of who we are and how we live, is having exposure to light. But how does it affect us in terms of human health, in terms of mood and sleep and energy and focus?
So many ways.
Yeah.
And we continue to discover new ways. I don't know, maybe every 6 months or so, I see a study that's got a new piece of information in it that I haven't seen before. We are at this time in human history, I suppose, where medical science has reached a certain level that we can, and brain science has reached a certain level that we can begin to understand what light does on the human body in a way that for thousands of years, we had no idea. Really, like, we didn't even know how this worked until the last 20 years or so. And that means we have to change everything we do about light, because now we know so much more about it. But ultimately, natural light is the best light. I think most of us would agree that natural light, pretty darn amazing. The sun, the stars, awesome. A close second would be fire, which is, you know, was first natural before we figured out how to make it. But that natural light, that sunshine that we get on a nice sunny afternoon, that's the best stuff there is. And I think only now we're beginning to understand why. Why is it the best stuff? Why is it so positive? It's not that we can see well.
Right.
Because we can do that with all kinds of stuff. We can do that with fluorescent, you know, 2x4s. Why is natural light better? What does it do for us? And that's where the scientific revolution has been over the last 25 years or so, is figuring out what happens when those photons go through our eye, hit our retina, go to our brain, cause chemical functions, and affect a whole host of bodily functions that are regulated over what's, you know, often called the circadian rhythm, or basically just means our day that is associated with a 24-hour cycle. There's so much of the body process is regulated by that, and you can trace the triggers all the way back to whether or not we got enough sunshine in the day. And I think we could probably spend the next 5 hours talking about that, but understanding it is what's made us decide to approach lighting differently.
Yeah.
In buildings.
The idea of lighting our space, right? That's often what we just do as architects. It's like, you know, okay, we're going to have windows there and we're going to use this type of light fixture over here, and it's going to light up the room at this certain level, and that's that. But you're saying that the science and the technology today is saying that it's much more important than that. It's not just about making sure that we can, you know, see our homework. It's about, you know, whether we're going to be healthy or not.
So let me give you a story that will illustrate the change there. I would say 25 years ago or so, I was working for an architectural lighting company in the Chicago area. We were doing a middle school in Columbus, Indiana with Perkins and Will. And I don't think that school ever got built. I think the referendum failed. But, you know, like, Columbus, Indiana is sort of like this architectural hall of fame. There's a lot of major architects. So we were really excited about this project. And we put everything we could into being part of that project. And I remember distinctly an argument we were having about how much light we should put in each classroom, how much artificial light, like what were the foot candle levels we were aiming for.
Right.
And we were aiming for about 40 foot candles of light on the tables. And at that time, energy efficiency was the main design idea. Like, you know, that's what we wanted to do, was have an incredibly energy efficient building. You know, it had windmills and, you know, all kinds of stuff. Fast forward to today, and we realize that 40 foot candles for a school kid at 10 a.m. is dramatically less than they need to be alert, to score well on tests, to sleep well at night. Like, we're starving people for light, I suppose, is one way to think about it. It's sort of like, what is the minimum amount of food you need to survive? And what is a healthy diet? And they're two completely different things. And what we've been doing in lighting for many years was giving people the like protein shake and saying, you're good to go. And not realizing there's so much more to what light is doing biologically that we need to change the way we're talking about light. So I think understanding the eye, and we can talk about that, understanding the brain and understanding sleep are probably three of the key components that have changed the way we approach light in our buildings. Because we don't want to, most of us are not working outdoors.
Yeah.
We're working indoors. So we have to compensate for that electrically.
Yeah. I'd like to go through those three. Could you do that? And as a thought, as you're talking, and every time I talk with you, I think about this, is that how many hours we sit inside,
mm-hmm.
right? In an office, maybe there's a window and maybe there's some natural light, but we're sitting for hours and hours, 90% of our life inside.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, our society is getting sick.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And we're getting sick for lots of reasons, not just the fact that we don't have enough light, but I am sure that the lack of light is a big piece of the problem.
Yeah. There's a group called the Light and Health Research Center out of Mount Sinai. And if you want to dig into the science, that's a great starting place to go. They do a lot of the research studies and have boiled it down into usable information. So somebody like even me can understand it, which is great. But what you just said about how many hours we spent inside is one of the key factors. Time is one of the key factors in light and human health and human well-being. So in other words, lots of people say, oh, you don't want blue light at night. Well, it kind of depends on when you get that blue light. And it kind of depends on how much of that blue light you get. And it kind of depends on how long you're exposed to that blue light. So to really understand it, you have to constantly measure the light you're taking over the course of the entire day. And nobody does that. We didn't have to do that because outside it was naturally regulated. We got tons of light at certain parts of day, a lot less light at other parts of day, absolutely no light at other parts of the day. And it wasn't just the lights are on in the morning and the lights are off in the afternoon. It's natural light was constantly shifting.
Right.
And our body is built for that, not for what we give inside. So that hours you were talking about, the hours we spend inside, it's 90% easily for most of us is 90% of our time indoors. And a lot of the time that we spend not in our house or our office is in a car with sunglasses on that is filtering out also a decent amount of light. So one of those researchers, Dr. Mariana Figueroa from the Light and Health Research Center, this was another sort of turning point for me when I heard her speak the first time. And I asked her later, I said, did you change anything about how you live your life because of this stuff? And she said, yeah, I don't wear sunglasses on the way to work anymore.
Hmm.
Like understanding that our bodies need significant amounts of light in the morning, especially, changes behaviors. So it's like, oh, I'm going to just blast as much light as I can, or I'm going to go outside, or I'm going to not wear my sunglasses, you know, as long as you're safe, of course. Like, because we realize that for a certain amount of time during the day, we need to be eating as much of that light as we can. And then in the afternoon, it's very different. And then in the evening, it's very different. So, you know, that's just a little bit on time.
There's two places I want to go. One is you talked about how the light actually goes into your eye and how important that is, just to explain that in terms of the sunglasses. But also you also mentioned the transition of light throughout the day, right? That in the morning it's dark and then it gets lighter, and it's not like you flip a switch on, it, you know, gradually gets lighter. And the morning light is different than the afternoon light, which is different than the evening light, and then it starts to get dark again. And that's important, right? That's important in terms of health. So can you talk a little bit about how we absorb the light and how we're actually impacted by it, and then how that change in light, seeing that we do spend 90% of our lives inside, are there ways that we can address that with either artificial lighting or some manipulation of natural light on the inside?
Okay, yeah. So let's talk about how we consume light through the eye.
Yep.
And then how we can get more natural-esque light inside
right.
of our spaces. And how we consume light with the eye, there's a couple of key points that drive the conversation and drive the solutions for that. And one of those key points is that the light, the eye itself is an incredibly complicated, amazing receptor of light. But it is not just a like, how many foot candles are coming in? It's so much more sophisticated than that. It starts with our eyes closed. So if you closed your eyes in a dark room and somebody put a flashlight in front of your face, you would know exactly when that flashlight was in front of your right. face, because our eyelids do not block out all light. That's intentional. That's so that if we're sleeping and the sun starts to rise, our eyes see that. We're completely asleep. We have no idea this process is going on, but light is already beginning to affect our day. It's changing our sleep pattern so that when enough light reaches our eyes, even through our closed eyelids, it wakes our brain up, it wakes our body up, and we're in the right sleep stage to wake up feeling rested. Like all of that happens naturally if we're outdoors, if we're, you know, in train. But then those particles of light, those photons, waves, you know, there's the big debate over which it is, but comes into the eye and we have this retina at the back of our eye. So all the light comes through the lens, it goes through the iris. The iris is also amazing because it can close down and we can see outside when it's super sunny, and it can open up and we can see inside when it's super dark. That's an amazing thing. So it's constantly changing.
Yes.
But then when it hits the retina is packed with all these cells. This is science class, you know, junior high science class, I guess, like the rods and cones that we were all taught about. Oh yeah, there's rods and cones. The light hits those and then it sends a signal through the optic nerve to the brain and yada, yada. Well, one of the sort of breakthroughs in this science is that the light that hits our rods and cones, by the time it hits our rods and cones, it's gone through some other cells. It's passed through some other cells on the retina. And for, you know, 100 years, we weren't sure what those other cells did. So we ignored them and we didn't teach them in science class or lighting design class. And what we've since discovered is that that other layer of cells, which are called IPRGCs, intrinsically photoreceptive retinal ganglion cells. Yeah. Okay. So I have to concentrate to get that out. Yeah. But in essence, they're light sensors. Our rods and cones are light sensors. But instead of being tied to the visual system, they're tied to the SCN in our brain, which is basically the time clock center. And there's other cells there that are tied to the mood center of our brain. So in essence, even if our rods and cones fail and we go blind, light could be affecting us every day because of those other cells, but it doesn't affect vision, so we don't see it, so it's all subconscious. But that's part of what makes us regulate our days, relax in the evening, why a candlelit dinner feels better than having dinner in, you know, aisle 9 of Walmart. Like there's actual things happening to our body and to our eyes that then affects the brain. And one of the researchers says, you know, light on the brain, strong, bright light on the brain acts on the brain exactly the way a cup of coffee does. The drug hits our brain and it changes the chemicals that our brain is sending to the rest of our bodies. So you can go outside for a walk on a sunny day, take 10 minutes outside and skip the cup of coffee and you'll get the same effect. That's just like a brief summary of how light affects us.
Yeah, yeah.
And if we have time, we should talk about how a lot of the health benefits come from sleep. So light and sleep are really very closely linked. But to answer the second part of your question, about how to get this indoors is, first of all, as an architect, if you can get natural light in there, please do, especially in the spaces that people are going to spend time in the mornings and like through to say mid-afternoon. So classrooms, for example, absolutely critical to get as much natural light as possible in there. And then when you can't, to supplement, you need to surround people with light. So if you and I hang up on this podcast and go outside right now, we're not going to have overhead lighting.
Right, right. It's not a point of light.
It's not a point of light overhead. Yeah, it's going to come from everywhere around us because the sunlight is so strong, it's being diffused through every particle molecule in the atmosphere. We're actually surrounded with blue light all day. Our body's built for that. And like we need to get that inside of our buildings during the day. So wall washing, indirect light, you know, basically everywhere we look, there should be soft light bouncing at us from every surface and every ceiling. That's going to start moving us towards natural light or towards the light that we need. And then you need to boost it. So you've got a lot more light than you're used to. And then, of course, in the afternoon and the evening, you got to do the opposite. You've got to really dim it down. And it can still come from all around us, but it should come from lower. Mm-hmm. You know, we should get rid of overhead sources at 4 p.m. or something and turn them all off.
Just like the sun setting in the west.
Exactly. It should go down and we should have warmer amber light. You know, I suppose since we're talking to architects, the best thing you can do is stop building buildings and just make people live outdoors. And all the lighting problems will be fixed, Mark.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll be out of a job. We'll all be out of a job, but people have better lighting.
Right, but then the next best thing is to design your lighting so it mimics natural lighting as much as possible.
Absolutely. So the wall behind my computer monitor is completely flooded with light. And there are, I can't see a single light source. I can't see a light bulb, or I can't even see the fixtures. They're all hidden, but I have really strong light that comes off that wall onto me, and I can change its color. I can tune it, is typically the word that's used, to crisper cool blue in the morning and a warmer amber in the late afternoon and evening. And I can get closer to what I would get if that whole wall was windows.
Let's take a quick break to say thank you to our sponsors for their support of this episode. Gain lessons learned and credits earned with Arcademy, ARCAT's continuing education program. Listen to popular episodes of the Detailed podcast and earn AIA-approved HSW credits. Yes, you heard that right, HSW credits for episodes of Detailed podcast. Listen to an episode, check out the learning objectives, and use what you've learned while listening to take the course. The program is free, it's simple, and can be found at arcat.com under the Resources tab. Or just go to arcat.com/arcademy. That's arcat.com/arcademy. That's arcat.com/arcademy. Please visit our sponsors today and thank them. Thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community. How important is it to hide the source? Because you've talked about that here several times, and in your presentations, you've mentioned that as well. What is the science behind not seeing the source, that it actually is ambient light that we're trying to achieve? Is that just a comfort thing, or is that a science thing?
That's probably a complicated question to answer. Mostly it comes down to soft light is comfortable and really bright light or high contrast light is uncomfortable. And that affects our vision because if, you know, for example, if I have a bare light bulb sitting next to my desk and I'm trying to work on the paper down below, my iris is going to try and close down to protect me from that bright light bulb.
Yeah.
But I'm looking at the paper and my iris is going to try and open up so that I can see what I'm doing, you know, my sketch or whatever. And so I've created a conflict for my eye. And you get fatigue and headaches from that conflict without ever knowing what's going on.
Yeah.
So that bright source, I mean, if you think about it, it's the sun. Like, the sun is fantastic, but who wants to look at it at noon?
Right. Don't do that.
Don't do that. Yeah. So you put a hat on outside to block it. We basically need that inside. But I'd rather put the hat on the light fixtures and bounce that light off get it to my eyes in a more soft fashion. But it can also be like lamps with big soft shades. So those mid-century Nelson pendants from, you know, the big like fabric and paper balls and things, cigar pendant, I think, those are pretty awesome because they've spread the light over such a large surface area that you can stare at it for hours and it's not going to hurt. So more of that, less of the, hey, look at this cool strip of LED.
Right. Anything that's producing a glare, essentially.
Yeah. High contrast with its background is bad.
Yeah. All right. You had mentioned earlier the importance of sleep. One of the things I love about you and your presentations are how willing you are to talk about the lack of light. So what was that thought that you had that you wanted to share in terms of sleep?
A lot of the light and health connection and the benefits of good lighting, the benefits of circadian lighting, the benefits of getting all this really bright light in the morning and getting, you know, very dim light in the evening. The benefits are direct, but also indirect. And the indirect ones essentially come from sleep. So when we get all the best and the right light at the right time of the day, we sleep better. And if we sleep better, our mood improves, our health improves, our memory improves, our cognition improves, we can be more active, we can perform better physically. Sleep has all of those, like getting good sleep has all of those benefits for us as humans. And when we disconnect, we enter what's called social jet lag. Basically, we put ourselves in a perpetual state of jet lag because we're not in sync with daylight. And that has profound consequences. So the research studies are basically uniform in saying that when we are disconnected, it's bad. And when we're connected, it's good to that natural cycle. So one example of that is a couple of studies, this also from the LHRC, that looked at people in skilled memory care facilities who get on average 2 to 3 minutes of natural light, full natural light exposure per day. That's how much they're outside. So they did these interventions where they basically made the tables light up. So there was this soft light that was getting into these people's heads. And it lowered the evening agitation, which is called sundowning sometimes in the Alzheimer's and dementia patients, and increased the memory and cognition of that group. In other words, it's not going to cure it, but it very clearly had a positive impact on them. And to us, it's a little less obvious and we're hard to study because we don't sit in one place all day. But you can extrapolate that to say, oh, yeah, actually, that's true for us too. It's true for us. If I want to perform my best, I need the sleep. And if I want the sleep, I need the light.
It's always interesting talking to you because my mind goes all over the place in terms of, you know, what I want to share. And we're running out of time. And we could, like you had mentioned, we could literally talk for hours about this. One of the things that I've changed about my life since knowing you and having gone through some of your presentations is that I eat outside breakfast every morning until I can't. So as soon as it gets warm enough, I eat breakfast outside to be outside because of the light, because of the things that you've taught me. And I do the same thing at lunch. When I have lunch, I eat lunch outside as long as I can. And luckily I'm in North Carolina, so we have a very long period of time where I could be outside. And after lunch, I intentionally walk the dogs and spend time outside and often stop and sit in the sun in order to make sure that I'm trying to make up, because I spend a lot of time in this office and I'm staring at windows. So that's good. I have natural light. I can see the sky, but I'm inside and I'm surrounded by artificial light. And so I very intentionally have built being outside in natural light into my day. So thank you for that. And I encourage others to do similar things.
I think that's great advice, Mark, and I'm glad to hear that you're doing it. I'm curious if you've noticed any difference in sleep or, you know, like, has anything changed?
Well, I've also combined it with more exercise, so I'm not sure what's impacting, but I do sleep better and I feel better. And I don't really know how to describe that, but I just generally feel better. I also have pretty severe neuropathy that I've developed over the last 20 years. And I think that the light has helped that, that as I spend more time outside, my body feels better. And for anybody who doesn't know, neuropathy is like nerve issues in your body. So you could be numbness, could be tingly. And for me, it started in my hands and it progressed throughout my whole body. And, you know, I've gone to doctors. The doctors tell me that I'm overstressed. Reduce your stress. It's like, all right, I have to reduce my stress. And so a lot of it has come down to me experimenting with different ways of trying to feel better, and exposure to light and more exercise, intentional, hard, heavy lifting exercise, I think has had significant impact on the way I feel.
You know, the human body is so complicated that, you know, most of the people in lighting will never say, hey, do this and you will feel good, because we're just too complicated for that. So, you know, a healthy diet, exercise, the right light, like these are all tools that can be used. None of them are going to cure all of your ills. All of them together should make a meaningful, you know, positive impact on your life. So I'm glad to hear that something's helping.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we have a little bit of time left. I want to talk about what you see in the future. What's coming? Because every time I talk to you, you always have this idea of what the state of the art is today, which is different than what it was 5 years ago, which is different than it was 10 years ago. What does the next 3 to 5 years look like in terms of light? What are the trends that we're going to see as architects that we should be paying attention to?
You use the word trend there, Mark. And I think there are two trends, sources of trends in lighting. One is design. And by design, I'm going to strip that down to just aesthetics. What looks cool? And what looks cool is a societal decision. Mm-hmm. You know, it's complex. I have no idea how it's made, but somebody decides that stainless steel appliances look cool, you know, and then everybody gets them. And then later someone says, you know, that's not cool anymore. Someone else decides whatever. And that trend in lighting is like how high-waisted the jeans are. You know, it's like who decides that? I have no idea. Yeah. And generally, it has nothing to do with whether those things are functional, comfortable, useful. So on that side, you know, there's still a lot of clear glass and there's a lot of LEDs that are like strips and sticks and ropes and things like that. And that can be done okay, but most of the time it's a lot of glare in the space. So that trend is one that I'm not super happy about. Trends that could be driven by the knowledge that we have in terms of science and technology and human biology, those trends, I think we're sitting on solutions today that positively impact human health and well-being in space. So more light in the morning, less in the evening, cooler light in the morning, warmer light in the evening, all of those kinds of things. We're sitting on those. We can make those happen today. They're not widespread yet. At the same time, the energy efficiency and environmental concern that drove lighting innovation for 20 years probably, we have to sort of swap that out and say, well, you know what? At certain points of the day, we actually need to use more wattage. We need to use more power because we need more foot candles. We need more light in our eyes. But at the other end of the day, we can do with less. So how can we win if, you know, like they seem like they're diametrically opposed, like we need more light, so that's going to be worse for the environment? Well, if we integrate control systems,
right,
then we probably can use the exact same amount of wattage or less over the course of the day because we can really limit it when we don't need it. That's huge. And if we get rid of line voltage lighting wiring in our houses, we can also have positive benefit. So we're still pulling big fat copper wires to all these fixtures, and then at each fixture, converting that electricity to the little bits that the LEDs need. We could be wiring our houses with low voltage wiring that dramatically reduces the copper usage, which would have a huge environmental benefit. And I've also heard people are concerned about EMF, electromagnetic frequencies in the house. If we drop to low voltage wiring, there's also apparently a significant reduction in EMF in the house. So in other words, I think we can basically have our cake and eat it too.
Yeah.
We can have better lighting and we can do a better job for conserving our resources if we adopt controls and switch to low voltage and start, you know, designing with the human in mind.
And now people, you know why he's called the evangelist of light.
Right. I'm going to pass a collection plate, Mark, on the way out.
And I think you are having an impact. And I think you will continue to have an impact because you are passionate about it. And you are so good at making it easy to understand, right? It's just a complicated thing that we're talking about. And you make it so easy to understand. And so I applaud you for that. I encourage you to continue to do that and to share your knowledge about light. I know few people who can do it as well as you. And so I'm happy that you're here today, but I'm looking forward to you sharing more of that information in the future.
Well, as you know, I won't shut up. And because I'm not the smartest person in the world, I had to come up with something else. And that was take all the research the really smart people do and just make it accessible. So, you know, it's why the business has a weird name, Light Can Help You, because we want to help people with light. We think light can actually help people live better lives. That's the name of the company and the mission or the vision. And then, of course, we just want to help people with light. That's what makes me happy and what drives the company as well.
Yeah, people certainly can reach out to you at lightcanhelpyou.com is the website. Do you have resources there as well? If people go there, are there things that they can learn from being on the website?
There are. There's a resource tab that takes you to some of our resources. I have a blog, languageoflight.blog is the blog. But in the next few months, we'll be launching an online community. So inspired by Entre Architect and the work that you're doing, Mark, we'll be launching an online community with Light that will have basically all of our knowledge base in it, continuing education, you know, the whole nine yards. And for trade partners like architects, we're going to have chat channels. So if you're looking for particular advice, we will be, the purpose is to be able to give that advice out. So I'm excited about that, probably January before that gets live, but we're building it now.
Well, keep us posted. I'll help you share that to our community because I know our community will be interested in that. Yeah, definitely let us know and we will let our community know. Final question. You're a business owner. You're an entrepreneur. What's one thing that a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
Start delegating even when it hurts. Yeah, you know, I think if we build the business on our shoulders, and I think as an entrepreneur, that's how it has to be in the beginning. Like it has to be all about us because oftentimes we're the whole company. If you want to get to a kind of a sustainable position and you want to have a company that exists after you're gone, if that's important to you, then you've got to start delegating even when it hurts, even when that person can't do it as well as you can, which is going to be the case in a lot of it, especially in the beginning. You've got to start delegating. And when that works, you get freed up to do the things that you do amazingly well, and somebody else gets a chance to grow. So I'd say start delegating.
His name is David Warfel. You can look him up. Lightcanhelpyou.com. The company is Light Can Help You. Thank you, David, for all that you do for our profession. You are teaching so many of us the things that we don't know about lighting. You're inspiring. I think you make a big impact on the way architects look at the lighting packages of their projects. I think so many of us in the past have just put down a grid of cans. And I know the people in our community who have been to your webinars, many of us have changed the way we design our lighting and have now worked with lighting designers. And that's all because of you. And so I appreciate you for doing that, for being an evangelist, and for coming by here and sharing a little bit of your knowledge at Entre Architect Podcast.
Well, thank you so much, Mark, for having me here and for doing the work that you do with entrepreneurial architects. It's great to know there are people out there trying to do better.
Thank you.
And trying to help other people.
Appreciate that. If you liked this episode of Entre Architect Podcast, please share a link to this episode with a friend. Either just click the share button or highlight the URL, and send the link to this episode with a friend, because that's how Entree Architect has grown to serve thousands more architects just like you. Throughout the 10 plus years of Entree Architect, that's how we've grown, architect to architect. So I would love for you to share this episode and all the episodes with one friend every week. We'd love that. And thank you to our sponsors for this episode. We don't have an episode if there's no sponsors. So thank you to our sponsors. Links to those sponsors, which you should go visit and click, and all the resources that we discussed today for this specific episode, they are all available at entrearchitect.com/podcast. Every episode that we've recorded is there, entrearchitect.com/podcast. Go click the links to the sponsors and say hello. Entree Architect is a member of the Gable Media Podcast Network. You should go visit that at gablemedia.com. That is the next evolution of interactive media and resources for the AEC community. You can now earn continuing education credits for listening to select episodes of this podcast, Entree Architect Podcast. Yes, AIA CEUs for listening to a podcast. It's there, and many other podcasts are there as well. And you can listen to all of them and get credit. Learn more about our program, Gable Members Program, at the gablemedia.com/members website. That's gablemedia.com/members. And if you are a small firm architect, join us today at Entree Architect Network. That is the worldwide organization for small firm entrepreneur architects. If you own your own architecture firm, you are an entrepreneur architect. You are an Entree Architect. With weekly live group business coaching, yep, we have business coaching there, monthly live business training with AIA CEUs, two a month, so 24 AIA credits per year, including 12 of those are HSWs. We have them in the membership. Business resources, all the resources you need to run your business, special session webinars, mastermind groups, and a thriving community of small firm architects just like you. Hundreds of architects are there waiting for you to join. So we provide the support and encouragement you need to succeed as a small firm architect. I know that you haven't been trained as a business person when you launched your firm. That's what we do. Come learn how to run a business at Entree Architect Network. And today you can go join right now for free for 30 days at this link, entrearchitect.com/30days will give you free 30 days for membership. Go check it out at entrearchitect.com/30days, and I will see you there. Thank you for listening to this episode of Entree Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage, and I want you to remember three words: love, learn, share. Have a great day. Are you NCARB certified yet? Join the network of over 45,000 architects who have the NCARB certificate to expand your professional reach. By becoming NCARB certified, you are demonstrating that you've met the national standards for licensure, a qualification that can be an important factor for firms when hiring and promoting. Certificate holders have a streamlined path to apply for a reciprocal license in all 55 U.S. jurisdictions, as well as access to an extensive library of free continuing education courses. Learn more today at ncarb.org.